Welcome to Losses Above Basement, a podcast about the intersection of baseball and statistics. I'm your host, Splash, joined by Alex and Mac. On this show, we'll discuss all things baseball from the latest news and trends to the most obscure stats. We'll also talk to some of the brains in the game, like Alex and Mac. Our goal is to provide you with a deeper understanding of the game and its players. We want you to leave each episode with a new appreciation for the beauty and complexity of baseball. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Flash, I hate you.
Good. Good. You should. You should.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. Welcome to
thank
Lost
you, Google Bard.
Replacement.
You are him.
You
thank
are
you.
So. This is why I think the AI is going to fail hard. Anyway, hello, guys. Welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am your actual host, and Alex Barr, joined by Matthias Albasaki and Ryan Splash Potts, my main men. After the Google Bard intro, how are we all doing today?
I had a pretty long day of work, but other than that, I'm doing all right. It was a day off for sports in my world, I would say. At least it was sort of pleasant outside, so yeah, I'm doing all right.
You know, it's a bit of a bittersweet day. My favorite manager at work is leaving. At least she gets a pay raise at her new job, so that's great. Otherwise, you know, plugging along here. Happy June, everyone.
Happy June, indeed. I'm doing all right. It's been a beautiful day here in the Pacific Northwest. I actually got to go golfing today, and it was a fun time. Shot right about on my handicap. Apologize for the weird intro on this. And not saying that I had Splash. That was on me for making it weird. I apologize on that. But also, Splash, what the hell? No.
Anyway. Okay, listen, that was perfectly fine. There were a couple weird things that we probably wouldn't say otherwise, but I think it's applicable in general.
Yeah, you know, artificial intelligence is taking over the world, so you know, you never know when something like that will be written.
Actually, I'm going to edit your statement. It's not artificial intelligence that's taking over the world. It's people that understand it and can use it.
That's pretty sophisticated.
This is a valid point.
Anyway, we're getting on to the show now. And today we're starting off with a topic that makes me honestly sad after the last series that happened. The Texas Rangers have been absolutely on fire as of late. They just swept my Seattle Mariners in what was honestly a bloodbath, as in two of the three games scoring double-digit runs. It was a slugfest against a Seattle Mariner pitching staff that's been pretty solid up until this point. So, gentlemen, I need to ask you here, with the Astros, the Mariners, the Angels, and the AL West, and the rest of the American League being pretty darn strong, what do you make of the Rangers right now? Do we think they're a playoff team? Do you think that they are going to be real? Is this real what we're seeing from them? Because this is truly a spectacle of an offensive performance by this team.
So I'm going to buy into parts of this team. The offense, I 100% am behind. I mean, you look up and down this lineup. Jonah Heim is finally having a strong offensive season. Nathaniel Lowe is having another good year. Marcus Semien has been on fire. Plus, Corey Seager is back, and he's raking. He just won AL Player of the Week. Ezekiel Duran was doing a great job in Seager's place. And that, you know, Josh Young, another rookie, he's been tearing the cover off the ball, too. Adolis Garcia's, 51 RBIs already. The offense is absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. So that, I do not doubt their offense that they can keep it up. Will they keep averaging 6.5 runs per game? Well, probably not. But, and then the starting rotation, I mean, Nathan Eovaldi has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. And I, you know, he's shown in the past that he can be a great pitcher. So I definitely buy into Eovaldi. The rest of that pitching staff, though, I'd say the jury is still out, especially with the news today that Jacob DeGrom is going on the 60-day IL. It's, I mean, without DeGrom, I mean, John Gray's been solid, but his peripherals are a little concerning. You know, 4.43 FIP compared to a 2.51 ERA. Martin Perez hasn't been as good as he was last year. Andrew Heaney also hasn't been as good as he was last year. And then the bullpen is kind of a mixed bag, you know. Will Smith has been all right this year as the closer, but the rest of that bullpen, I mean, Jonathan Hernandez he got sent to the minors. Cole Reagans hasn't been that good. Brock Burke and Jose Leclerc have been all right, but it's kind of a top-heavy pitching staff. So I think the offense, 100%, I buy in. The pitching staff, though, not so sure.
I'm leaning heavily into buying here. I know that leaning heavily is a bit of an oxymoron, but the offensive production here is very good, and I think there's potential for a lot of it to stick. And a lot of the production they got the end of April, early in May, was without Corey Seager, and he's the best player on the team, sans DeGrom, of course. And you're doing it without him, right? You're getting Jonah Heim becoming not one of the best defensive catchers in baseball, but one of the best catchers in baseball. You know, he's knocking on the door of being a top five catcher. Nathaniel Lowe has been actually very good defensively, which is, I'm surprised, but he's still been productive at the plate. Marcus Semien, you know, his stats are probably a touch over what he's expected to do, but he's every day, so it's going to balance that out. Ezekiel Duran has been good. Josh Young is making a push for Rookie of the Year. Tavares in center field has been good. Adolis Garcia has been good. And then you're just adding Corey Seager back into that. And Seager's one of the best hitters in the league when he's healthy. That is a big asterisk there. But I think a lot of the hitting can stick. And keep in mind, they're doing this at a ballpark that is not exactly known for being Coors Field. Let me put it that way. And I think on the pitching side, I'm kind of getting like 2015, 2014 Royals vibes here that, yes, the bullpen itself is not good, but you have pieces in the bullpen that you can trust. You have pieces that if your starters are going six innings, if the Rangers get a six-inning start from their starter, they are probably winning the game. I think we are at a point that you're going to get competent enough 7-8-9 pitching for Texas that they're going to win a lot of games. So the offense is going to score a bunch of runs. So even if Eovaldi doesn't have it one day, or Perez doesn't have it one day, or Heaney doesn't have it one day, if they go six and you score five or six runs, they have a pretty solid shot. You know, Burke has been good. Leclerc has been good. And Will Smith has been good. And we know what he can do in the playoffs too. So I'm buying Texas. I think they have a serious shot to win the AL West. I think they have a serious shot to go to the ALCS. World Series, maybe a touch early, because you have the Astros, who are battle-tested, of course. You have Tampa, who always seems to be existing there. But I'm buying Texas as a serious threat, a serious team that could win a round in October.
Am I buying them as a threat? Yes. I think they are a good team. Think that offensive production is something that has to be, you know, talked about. Am I buying that they are a full-on playoff team, guaranteed playoff team, and making it that far? Absolutely not. Do I think that they have a chance to make the playoffs, though? Absolutely. When I look at what they've done so far this season, I think the first place you got to take a look at is how have they done over the course of their last few series, right? Well, over the last few series, they swept Seattle, beat Detroit 2-3, beat Baltimore 2-3, beat Pittsburgh 2-3, swept Colorado, and the last series they lost was against Splash's Atlanta Braves. And even that, during that series, they still put up pretty solid offensive numbers except for game one, where they lost 12-0. But when you look at these games, it's really interesting to take a look at the scoring. Against Colorado, the lowest amount of runs they got in that series was 7. Over the course of that entire series, again, yes, I get it. It's against, you know, the Rockies, but this was in Texas. This was not actually at Coors. They scored a grand total of 30 runs in 3 games. That is very impressive. Then you have Pittsburgh, where they scored 13 runs. Then against Baltimore, where you scored, what is it here? Yeah, 19 runs. Add a little bit extra salt to my own self on this one here. They scored another 30 runs against Seattle, sweeping them. Like, this offense is something that really has to be, you know, taken seriously. And that's never been the question, especially when you look at guys like Ezekiel Duran, who has been playing absolutely fantastic, and Seager, who is coming back and saying everyone, hey guys, am I late? A la Sonic the Hedgehog. So I like what I'm seeing for the team offensively, but pitching I'm always going to be a little bit suspect of. I look at this, and when you go on to any of the site, and you sort by ERA, I know I'm not the best stat to use. I just like to use it for a lot of reasons. You get rid of any players that have below 10 games played, and the ERA gets a little bit suspect from there. Dane Dunning has been good for him as a good team, as has Eovaldi. Gray's been solid. DeGrom hasn't played for them, who was supposed to be their big linchpin. Jose Leclerc has been all right and solid. But after that, it starts getting a little bit weird, and that's where I think the problem lies into here. When you look at teams that have been historically good over the last few years, especially, you see that a lot of them have been dominated by having solid pitching, all the way from starters to relievers. Like, the most recent time I could think of where the pitching was like, that they got done was the Washington Nationals. And by the way, we'll talk about them a little bit later on the show. But I look at that, and it just makes me wonder, when I look at this pitching staff, this gives me just bubble popping syndrome here. When is this bubble going to burst? Because when that pitching bubble pops, then this team's going to have Los Angeles Angels syndrome, where they're going to score 100 runs, but they're going to give up 101. And that still equals one thing at the end of the day. It equals an L in the win-loss column. And that's what I worry about when it comes to this team. I don't think they have the pitching to sustain themselves. Do I think they can make a playoff push? Absolutely. So should look at that offensive production? Absolutely they do. We haven't seen this level of offensive production with runners on in scoring position since Murderer's Row. So this is what I want to see from them. I think right now it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the trade deadline, because I think they're going to be heavily in the market for not one, but multiple pitchers. They're going to try and get an extra starter to work through in the rotation, and then maybe one or two bullpen arms. Are they going to go big? Possible. I don't know if they're going to go fully, because I think they need multiple pieces to get it done.
I have an outrageous take that I just thought of.
Oh, I mean, we have that segment. Oh,
great. You want to lose it now?
Okay, well, this is important. The 2023 Rangers or the 2021 Astros?
I don't quite get what you're saying.
Okay. So I don't see that. The thing with the Astros the last 2 years, right, is that they have three bullpen dudes they trust, and their pitchers are always going six or seven innings. So when you have that combination of things plus a powerful offense, you're generally going to win games. This is why Pittsburgh actually was winning a lot of games early in the season, because you were just cutting out the middleman. You were giving it, your starter's going to go six innings, you're going to give it to a competent reliever, you're going to give it to David Bednar, you're going to win the game. They are doing that, and they're doing it really well, that all three, I think, are working, and it's much easier to win game when your pitchers are, you know, pitching into the sixth, pitching into the seventh every night. And I'm not saying that's a guarantee. Like, heck, Framber Valdez just got lit on fire the other day, and he's like the king of the quality start. But I see some similarities with how the Astros are constructed, at least how they're constructed, and the platonic ideal of what the Astros are supposed to be and what the Rangers are supposed to be. I think they're pretty similar.
So I see where you're coming from here, but I'm going to have to disagree with you. The reason why, if you go and take a look at the 2021 Astros and their pitching staff, right? The first names that come up with them are Zach Greinke, Lance McCullers Jr., Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, and Jake Odorizzi. I think that's better than what the Rangers have right now without DeGrom. Because right now, I don't think any one of us can truly put DeGrom and say I rely on him right now, because his arm is made of tissue paper at this point.
But yeah, that's like, why I said 21 Astros, because they didn't have Verlander.
That's fair, I get. And so, okay, then if you want to do that then, so let's take out Verlander the same way as we DeGrom with this. But even then, I still think the Astros have much more solid pitching than what the Rangers do right now. As I take a look at them, especially their bullpen. For the Astros in that year had Ryan Presley, who had a 2.25 ERA, Christian Javier, Ryan Stanek, Brooks Raley, and Blake Taylor. And the worst of those guys ERA-wise was Brooks Raley with a 4.78. That's solid of their main five guys.
I mean, you still only had like three guys you trust there. Right. And Javier started some games too for them.
Yeah.
All the, like McCullers didn't pitch in the, did he pitch at all in the playoffs? I don't, he didn't pitch in the World
started,
Series.
He started, he did, no, he, so he got hurt in the ALDS.
That's right. That's right.
So that's the thing is, when I look at like comparing those two teams, I'd say the Rangers had the better offense. And I mean, there's a reason why they have a plus 152 run differential coming into tonight. But I think the Astros had a little more pitching depth. Like I was saying, I think that the Rangers have just a very top heavy pitching staff. And I don't like, is what's DeGrom going to be when he comes back? That's my biggest question about their staff. Because that's if true. They do have Jacob DeGrom, well, you have arguably the best pitcher in the sport when he's healthy. But I'm just wondering if he comes back, is he going to be the same? Is he even going to be able to be a starter? So I think the Rangers are a team that they seem destined to make the playoffs. I'm still curious to see if they'll hang on to that division lead even. I mean, look, the Astros are catching fire right now. So I'm curious to see how this all plays out, though. I think the AL West has become far more competitive than we expected it to.
I picked four of these bozos to make the playoffs. So,
I mean, I picked three of them to make the playoffs. I'll say right now, though, I have been wrong about the Rangers so far. So we'll see what happens.
Let me also just really quick go out and say that earlier I did pick the AL West to being one of the top two toughest divisions in all of baseball. I think the Rangers being really good helps out with that idea.
This is a good point.
Anyway, we're going to move on here from the Rangers, and we're going to go on to a little bit more somber news here on losses by replacement. Steven Strasburg right now has been shut down indefinitely due to nerve damage, and it's looking very likely that he may never pitch again. Now, guys, I mean, this is something that's honestly devastating for a guy that really gave everything he could for his team, gave everything he could during this team's World Series run back in, what was it, 2019, yeah? Then just to be told, hey, you're never going to be able to throw a ball again. What do you even say at that point? It's heartbreaking for that kid. It's heartbreaking for baseball to see that a guy that, honestly, I can't name anybody who did not like Strasburg. Strasburg was a guy that people really liked watching. He was one of the most hyped up prospects in history as he made his debut, like, what, 1 year after the day after he was drafted, and then still went out and got, like, double-digit strikeouts. And to be fair, also we'll have a little bit in Seattle Mariners lore, as the only reason why he was not a Mariner was because Seattle decided to get a grand slam walk-off home run against the A's, courtesy of one Montana catcher Rob Johnson. But that ended up with Seattle drafting Dustin Ackley. But I think overall with this, like, the baseball world should be mourning at this, because this is a kid who has truly given everything he can, has done everything that he could right, and yet still just got the worst news possible.
Yeah, Strasburg, when he got drafted, he was the most hyped up prospect ever, at least from a college baseball standpoint. I mean, he was a guy who could throw triple digits with a wipeout curveball. He was very clearly big league ready from the start. And I remember that major league debut, the Nationals were at a low point in their franchise's history, and he electrified Nationals Park. I mean, you rarely see that stadium sell out, especially during the regular season, but that stadium was packed. Just watch this kid strike out 14 batters in 7 innings in his first major league start, just a year after getting drafted. And really, I mean, yeah, he got Tommy John surgery, but he learned how to pitch without being able to throw triple digits. And I think, you know, we talk about that 2019 postseason run, and he was just so good. I think one of the outings that sort of gets lost in that postseason run is when he came in and pitched 3 shutout innings of relief in the NL wildcard game. Because remember, before the Nationals even came close to the World Series, they almost didn't make it out of that wild card game against the Brewers. They were down 3-0. Max Scherzer got knocked out early, but Strasburg came in, held it down, and the Nationals rallied and they won. And then, you know, he had a good series against the Dodgers, another, you know, great seven shutout innings against the Cardinals, and then won World Series MVP. You know, he is a postseason ERA of 1.4. And even when the Nationals weren't winning series, he pitched lights out. So I think, you know, it's sad to see him just, you know, he was a guy who electrified the Nationals franchise, sort of was the start of the turning point for that team. And, you know, he sold out for that World Series ring. And unfortunately, ever since he got that large contract, he's only made 8 starts. So if this is it for him, I mean, he had a great career when he was on the field. It's just disappointing to see that this is going to be how it ends.
So I am a Braves fan. We know this. I own a Steven Strasburg jersey, like one of the nice ones, like the curly W in the Independence flag edition, $300, like that one. I don't own a $300 Braves jersey, but I own a $300 Steven Strasburg jersey. And there's a Steven Strasburg cutout from the Washington Post on my wall back home. So I think that should tell you what I think of one Steven Strasburg, but just his ability to like capture the moment. If there was a big spot, Strasburg was your guy, whether it was the World Series, whether it was his debut, whether it was, you know, I can remember back in 2012 when the Nationals had him on a pitch limit or on a innings limit. It's like, why aren't you letting him pitch? Well, injuries followed. Yes, we get that. But what Strasburg could do, and I wish he could do it again, is just control the moment. Capture the moment, control it, and own it. That's what he did at San Diego State. That's what he did with the Washington Nationals for 10 seasons. And then the wheels came falling off the last three. But, you know, he's a guy that through 10 seasons struck out 167 batters per year or 170 batters per year. And that's 46th most ever in a player's first 10 seasons. And a lot of the guys ahead of him pitched a lot more innings. But for 10 seasons, he was a 130 ERA plus guy. That is one spot below Bob Gibson. That is better than Dwight Gooden. That is better than Justin Verlander. That is better than Yu Darvish, CC Sabathia, Smoltz, David Cone, Steve Carlton, Sandy Koufax, David Price. He was awesome. And for just a brief moment, it seemed like a brief moment, but he pitched 10 years at this level. An all-star, a silver slugger, a guy that, you know, was a Cy Young contender several seasons, but most importantly for the Washington Nationals, a World Series champion, a World Series MVP. And I know we don't talk about busts in the baseball world, because if you're drafted and make the big leagues at all, you're not a bust, right? That just, it goes out the window because baseball is just that grind of a sport. But if you think of Strasburg in other sports, like say a Blake Griffin might be considered a bust in the NBA, even though he's a like multi-time all-star, but it's the NBA. Steven Strasburg was worth every single penny the Nationals spent for him. Regardless, he could never pitch again. They could give him a $500 million contract tomorrow, never pitch again, and it would be worth every penny because of what he did in 2019, what he did for his first 10 seasons in Washington, what he did that faithful summer day in 2010 against Pittsburgh. Simple.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. I'm a guy that's always liked Strasburg, just from the idea of how much he really brought to the game. He brought an intensity that we don't see very often in today's baseball, but also I really like what you said about controlling the moment. This is a guy that when he was drafted to be the flamethrower. He was drafted to be a dominating pitcher that was going to beat you with velocity and then a little bit of break, and that's a good break and stuff. When he got Tommy John, had to come back and learn how to do all that without the high velocity. And you know what he did? Exactly that. He learned how to dominate and how to be a prime time arm while still just being, it's like, while not having that velocity that he grew up having. On top of it, one thing I want to bring up as well is the duo of him and Max Scherzer with the Nationals is right up there with some of the best 1-2 punches in the history of our game. Like, those two, when you put those two one after another, was lights out. You felt in trouble if you were in a series and you had to face off against both of them. And it's so weird to think about when it comes to Strasburg that he has been in the league for 13 years. His first start, his first game, came in 2010. It does not feel like it has been 13 years since this game came out. I remember again watching when he did come up. I remember watching Dustin Ackley, the guy that was drafted right after it coming up, and those two guys' careers would always be linked because they were 1-2. And one became, like you said, a bust, and one became one of the most interesting pitchers to ever watch. One that gave everything he could so his team could win. Again, like we talk about how his performance in the playoffs was one of the biggest reasons that sparked the team to win, to make it all the way and win the World Series in 2019. We've talked about when he came up in 2010 was the first real sign that this team had life. That was the first real player that I looked at that team and I said, okay, you know what? They're on a rise. They are on an uprise. Are they the truth? No. But are they going somewhere? Absolutely. And if Strasburg never pitches again, then he still had a hell of a career and baseball. He'll definitely be in the Rangers Hall. The Nationals Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and yeah, that's the thing is, like we were saying, the Nationals were, I mean, they had so many just like, you know, rocky years, and they basically tanked, and they were able to land Steven Strasburg in 2009 and then Bryce Harper the following season. And it's one of the few instances where, you know, tanking worked in their favor. And it's crazy to think, because Harper got, I'd say, more attention from the national media, but he didn't stick around to get his World Series ring in DC. Strasburg had his opportunities to leave. He could have left after that 2019 season, but he stuck around and got that big contract. So I understand that right now, you know, I know a lot of fans are looking at that contract and saying, like, why in the world did the Nationals agree to this? Well, he gave it his all for his team. And I think that, you know, if you're a Nationals fan, especially, you should be very appreciative of what he did.
I have one final stat. This, I think, is just a fascinating group of players. So first 10 seasons, minimum of 230 games started. These are the five guys with an ERA plus of 130. Felix Hernandez, Dizzy Trout, Burt Blylevin, Mike Mussina, Steven Strasburg. That is one whale of a group to be in.
I was going to say, that's
nice. Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Damn. Well, for Strasburg, and hopefully things, you know, hopefully maybe a miracle can happen that lets him continue to, but if it is the end for him, then hell of a career, bud. And I'm glad, I think all of us are glad that we got to see it. So with that being said, we're going to move on to hopefully a less depressing topic here, as we're going to be moving on to some hot takes. Now, weather's warming up. So here it was 72 degrees at its highest, and later on in this week, it's going to get to 85. So why not? Let's talk about some things that, you know, some things that are going to make us all just go, what the hell are you talking about? My most famous recent one was talking about the Mariner City Connect jersey pants were great. Anyway, that's another topic for another day. But we all have
incorrect.
Picked one. You're wrong and you're still wrong. We've all picked one topic. We've also gotten one from the Bird app. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter at @LAR_baseball. We post a lot of good baseball content there. Thank you again, Splash, for that. But we all have topics here. Who would like to share their hot take first? Splash, you raised your hand on an audio podcast. Good job. Let's see it. What do you got, man?
All right. Given the run environment, given how pitchers are pitching nowadays, given the state of 2023 baseball, Luis Arraez is the best pure hitter in the history of the sport.
I get it where you're coming from, especially considering the fact of, I think I saw this stat earlier today. I was looking on Twitter that he currently right now has over seven times more base hits than he does strikeouts. I believe it's something like that. He struck out 11 times this year as 80 base hits.
He's batting 300 with two strikes. He's batting 400 against right-handed pitchers. And through 444 games, he has the same batting average as Tony Gwynn, two hits fewer than Tony Gwynn, and 18 more hits than Pete Rose.
So, okay, I'm going to say that is a hot take right now, because still at the same time, like, when I think about pure hitter, I also look at not just hitting for average. I think he is the best at, one of the best in the history of the game, putting bat on ball. I don't call that full pure hitter, though. Also call pure hitter being able to really drive the ball and getting a lot of good extra base hits. It also incorporates some power in there, where Arias, not been the biggest power guy. But his ability to put bat on ball is something that I will always marvel at. Just from the idea of, I love hitters like Arias, where you don't have to worry about you making a mistake, where you can at least put the ball in an opportunity for the defense to make a mistake.
Fair enough. Mac, what say you?
Yeah, oh, this is a difficult one, because like Alex said, I mean, in terms of just making contact, I mean, it's hard to be better than what Luis Arias is. It's crazy, because he also, like, defies Statcast, because they're, like, he's in, like, the first percentile and average exit velocity. Like, he's got a lot of blue circles on his Statcast page, but he's near the top in expected batting average, which sort of supports his .399 average this year. I don't know if he can hit 400, actually, but I don't know if he's one of the best pure hitters ever, necessarily. Like Alex said, I kind of value being able to put together power with those amazing bat to ball skills. He only has one home run this year, and I mean, 14 doubles though is nothing to scoff at. So I'd say, you know, he is kind of like a Tony Gwynn or a Wade Boggs or a Pete Rose type player, in that he's a big time singles hitter. Doesn't swing and miss much, but I wouldn't say necessarily that he's one of the best pure hitters ever.
Here's a stat to kind of finalize my point, if Fangraphs will load, please. There's a stat on Fangraphs called Average Plus. This is what a player's batting average compared to the rest of the league, rest of the run environment. Here are the only players ahead of Luis Arias: Ty Cobb, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Josh Gibson, Dave Orr, Pete Browning. That is it.
And that's a list right there in and of itself.
Yes.
At that point. So do I think he's one of the best one of the best pure hitters in baseball? I mean, in bat to ball skills, yes. In being a hitter, no. I think there's a very different thing on that right now.
Also, note the criminally underrated Dan Brothers at a 129 average plus.
Yeah, I mean, I think Arias, he's definitely a hitting machine. I'll say that much. So I'm looking forward to seeing how high his average ends up this year, because I think he's definitely I think he's going to win another batting title. And man, the one thing is, I just wish he wasn't in the NL East, because
that's fair.
It's only been 7 games between the Mets and Marlins so far, but dude's just impossible. Get out.
Well, that's the thing, like, and that's what's so impressive and why this take isn't as, like, you know, molten hot as it could be, is that anytime that you have a guy that you can basically guarantee is not going to strike out, is insane to see. Whether or not that means it's going to be a ground ball, whether it's a slap single, whether it is a fly ball, anything like that. Like, that's a huge commodity for any manager to have.
Yeah, I think the thing with Arias and, like, how he breaks Statcast is he hits a ton of line drives. Like, he's not hitting the ball on the ground, which, okay, good. That's baseline. But with his batted ball profile, like how hard he hits the ball, he's not hitting fly balls, because his fly balls would be cans of corn, right? So it's not a, you know, think Acuna or Judge fly ball that's going to go 400 feet. It's a, you know, a pretty lazy one. So he's really optimized that launch angle and been able to really control that and just spray, right? Instead of, you know, the traditional thing is, oh, you're going to hit the ball like on the ground through the infield. Well, Arise is getting it over the infield, but he's not hitting it hard enough to find an outfielder's glove. It's kind of that, like he's using a wedge basically, right? He's not on the green, so he's not putting, but he's not in the tee box driving. Sorry for the horrible analogy, but I think that's what makes Arise special. And that's what makes, I think, a lot of the great hitters in the Arise mold special, is that their ability to, you know, defy the batted ball data, defy the BABIP and whatnot, because you're just putting it where defenders are never going to be, because you're not going to put a guy, you know, halfway between your left fielder and your third baseman. But Arise is going to hit the ball there 50 times a year, 75 times a year, and just spray and spray and spray and spray.
To quote one of the greatest baseball quotes of all time, you got to hit them where they ain't.
Exactly. And that's exactly what Luis Arise does.
He does that to an incredible degree. All right, Mac, do you want to give yours or should I give mine right now?
Yeah, I'll give mine actually, and I'm going to stay in the National League. So my hot take is that the Arizona Diamondbacks are a playoff team, and Corbin Carroll will finish top 10 in NL MVP voting. And I feel like to some people, they're like, oh, yeah, duh, look at the standings. They're, you know, they're tied for first place in the National League West. But you got to remember that this is a pretty young team that not a lot of people expected to necessarily take that next step to being a playoff team this year. But you look, you know, I think they have a true ace in Zach Gallen and a very good number two in Merrill Kelly. And I think Brandon Fought is going to be a very good pitcher in the majors. I like their bullpen. I know Miguel Castro just had a rough outing, but I think Castro and Andrew Chafin and Kevin Ginkle and Scott McGuff are all good pitchers. I like Dre Jameson a lot. And really, I think Corbin Carroll is a budding star. This year, in 57 games, he's hit 10 homers, 15 doubles and triples, stolen 16 bases, has 2.2 WAR, an 895 OPS, and a 145 OPS plus. Plus, you look at his Statcast, it's just a lot of red, a lot of different shades of red, but I really like what I see out of Corbin Carroll, and I love that the D-backs already extended him. So I think that the D-backs, I think, you know, with the state of the National League, there aren't a lot of great teams. There's a lot of mediocrity. I think they will make the playoffs, and I think Carroll is going to be leading that charge.
Well, I know Michael Harris won't be writing Corbin Carroll any Christmas cards anytime soon. But
yeah, that's for sure.
That was rough. Oh, my goodness. If anyone needs a hit to fall, it's Harris. But regardless, I don't think this is a hot take. I think this is on the cooler side, because you didn't say they're going to win the division. They're going to win 95 games. And if they make the playoffs, chances are they're going to have someone in the top 10 in MVP voting. While Alex talks, I can look up how accurate that was last year. But, you know, Carroll is a, I don't want to say revelation, because he was like a top three prospect in baseball his entire career, but just the profile here is the speed. Okay, we get it, the speed. But he does everything at a high level. We talk about the speed. He has A-grade speed, 80-grade, whatever you want to call it, right? But he's a five-tool guy. He hits for some power. He's a, I think, a good defensive player in a corner and an adequate one in center. And, of course, he just makes Chase Field look like Great American Ballpark, you know, with the way he covers ground. He walks to that, like, a 22-year-old with an 11% walk rate. What is going on here? Doesn't strike out a whole lot. ISO is above 230. So just, he's the whole package. And I think he's a guy that, with James Outman coming back to earth, he's a guy that might run away with NL Rookie of the Year, with all due respect to Francisco Alvarez. But just the consistent production, the, you know, kind of the stuff, the stat sheet ability. And I think he's a five-tool guy. I think there's a strong argument he should be an all-star starter this year behind like Acuna and Soto, or Acuna and Betts, or whatever two dudes you want to choose, the two traditional guys. I think Carroll is a deserving third.
Yeah, I'm not sure how hot of a take this is. I think the hottest, part of your take will be Corbin Carroll being top 10 in the MVP voting. I think that he is a stellar player and has a very good chance of it if he continues up and he continues on being a patient hitter, especially considering the fact that he is probably one of the most versatile players right now in the National League, especially versatile rookies, that he's not going to be the big power threat. You don't need him to be. What you need him to do is play good defense, cover all the ground in the world, and then get on base and steal a few here and there. And guess what he's doing? Exactly that. He has been an absolute firecracker of a player. Watching him play and watching him go, it's electric watching what he does. He does things that make people go stand up and go, wow. That is who Corbin Carroll is. I fully believe that the Diamondbacks are going to make a postseason spot this year. I think I would even say potentially pretty likely they could even win the division. With how the Dodgers, the Padres, Giants, and Rockies have been, I don't think it's too far-fetched. I think that I still think that there are teams that may be better than, but that's a big maybe. Like, we've seen Gallen turn into a great starter. We have seen these players around this team that have worked their butts off and have turned themselves into a stellar ball club. So, yeah, I'm going to say this is actually not that hot of a take. I think that's very realistic.
And to back up my point about the top 10 MVP not being that outlandish, last year, the top 9 players in National League MVP voting made the playoffs, and 14 of the top 15, the only exception being Sandy Alcantara. In the AL, it was 7 out of 10, the only exceptions being the obvious Ohtani and Trout, and then Xander Bogaerts. So if you make the playoffs and you're the best player on a playoff team, Julio Rodriguez, Aaron Judge, Jordan Alvarez, Jose Ramirez, chances are I think you're going to be a top 10 guy in MVP.
Yeah, and the part of the reason why I thought I think people might disagree is I don't know how many people are actually buying into the Diamondbacks yet. That's the thing, is that I think that they're playing great right now, but I feel like you look back at our preseason predictions, and I think 2 of us had the Padres making the World Series. I had the Padres winning the World Series. I feel like we didn't really show enough love to the D-backs, because the D-backs took a huge step forward last year. And I had Carroll winning Rookie of the Year, but I didn't, he's been, I think he, even with that prediction, he's exceeded my expectations. So I think, though, that the D-backs they're going to continue to surprise people.
And I think the fun thing with how Arizona plays baseball is that it's different from the rest of the league. They kind of mash, but they kind of do the A's thing of they're just going to run the bases. They're going to try to, they're going to try to bunt. They're going to try to, hit and run. And sometimes the hit and runs are successful, right? And they're going to get these extra bases that are kind of hidden, right? The going to first to third, or Carroll scoring from first on a double. He does that exceptionally, or scoring from second on a single. And those are going to be the difference. Maybe you don't get a great start from Merrill Kelly, or maybe you don't get a start from generic pitcher number 3, right? But you're going to manufacture a run here or there. You're going to run on a good catcher in Sean Murphy, right? You're going to run on, Elias Diaz, who's actually been a great defensive catcher this year. You're going to run on these guys, and you're going to make stuff happen. You're going to make the defense think about it, and they're going to have a throwing error here or there. You're going to score an extra run. And I think that's what makes Arizona fascinating, is that it can kind of bash. You have, Christian Walker. I mentioned Corbin Carroll as an ISO over 230. Ketel Marte is all right, And you have Lourdes Gurriel, who's been excellent this season. You have like a lineup of good hitters, and then you just add that Guardians thing. You add that, you're going to steal some bases. You're going to fudge it around a little bit and make it work. You do that, and you mash, and you have a decent pitching staff. I think this is a very strong team. There's a reason they are half a game behind the best team in the National League, the Atlanta Braves. By record, at least.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That was a little mean. I apologize. No, I'll go back on what Max said a second ago. I don't think we did give the team enough love. I know that we showered them with a lot of praise during the preseason predictions, but we still picked them having being third. I think that's at least where I put them. I put them at third.
But I may have had San Francisco over them. I don't remember.
I had them third. I know I had Arizona third.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had Arizona third, Dodgers one, Padres two, I think. Something like that. Anyway, regardless, I think that they are going to continue surprising people, and this may be one of the most interesting Diamondbacks teams we've seen in a long time. Anyway, with that, I'm going to move on to
my... I found it. Okay. I had the Diamondbacks in fourth. Alex had the Diamondbacks in fourth. You had the Padres winning the division. Mac had them in third. He also had the Padres winning the division. I was the only one that has a brain and picked LA, so...
Fair enough. I mean, the fact that you say you have a brain is something that I will very much contest. That's probably the hottest take we've heard so far.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Alex, it's time for you to blow that out of the water, buddy. let me hear this.
Yeah, Julio Rodriguez
will be unanimous MVP the next 15 seasons. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I already told you the team. I'm not even touching the Mariners at this exact moment. That may change. But all right, here's my hot take. Shohei Ohtani, my hot take is that he is going to get traded at the deadline, and the team that he goes to will sign him to a $500 million plus deal.
Yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and sell on this.
Sell. I'm out.
You think he's staying?
So the reason I am going to sell here is because the asking price for Ohtani is just going to be absolutely ridiculous. Like, I honestly don't know what a realistic package would be to get him because the asking price is so high. And that's the other thing is that if you trade for him this year, you still have to worry about trying to get him back, either re-signing him before free agency, you know, giving him an extension, or him hitting the free agent market and trying to get him back. So I just cannot see this happening. Plus, the Angels, while they haven't been great, they have been better than they have been in years past. So I think that the Angels, heck, there's even a slight chance the Angels are buyers at the deadline. So I'm going to sell very, very aggressively on this. I can't see it happening. I can't see any team wanting to meet the asking price that the Angels have set.
Yeah, and I think, first of all, the Angels are above 500, at least entering play June 5th. They are a couple games out of a wild card spot, 8.5 back of the division. So you're not totally done, and this is one nice thing about six teams making the playoffs in both leagues, that teams like the Angels, teams like the Mariners, teams like the Red Sox, teams like the Guardians, well, I guess the Guardians more because they play in the Central, but those teams are not, like, cooked, right? 6 weeks or 8 weeks into the season, right, at 500 ball. So I don't think the Angels would have any reason to trade him unless they truly think they can't get him back. And then you have, like, I guess, a Soto situation that you're kind of being held hostage, and then that diminishes the asking price. But the Angels would only accept offers from a couple teams, and you're talking incredibly deep farm systems with established major leaguers as well. So if you're the Orioles, right, would you consider Adley and Grayson Rodriguez and Gunnar Henderson? Like, is that enough to get Ohtani if you're the Angels? And if you're the Orioles, I don't think you're considering that at all. Or if you're Arizona and they ask for Gallen, Carroll, Christian Walker, I don't know, or Gallen, Carroll,
Brandon Pfaadt, probably.
Brandon Pfaadt, you know, or if you're the Braves, Gabriel, like, okay, Moreno. Michael Harris. Actually, he's been horrible this season. Like,
you would still have to be in the package.
Probably. Yeah, you're asking for at least three, for lack of a better term, like, a potential dudes, I would say. At least one hitter, at least one pitcher. I don't think, maybe Baltimore has a package, but why would Ohtani want to go to Baltimore? And why would the Orioles think they could? The Orioles used money on Kyle Gibson. Like, come on, what are we doing here? why would they pay Ohtani $10 million, let alone $500 million?
All right, so here's my argument, right? So when I look at this right now, there are a few factors I like to take into account. The first of which is that Ohtani has already said that he's not happy with the Angels. He's not happy with ownership. He's not happy with how the team has done over the course of how he, over the course of when he's been at his highest level. So I think right now the Angels are at a position where they may not be confident they can re-sign him. Second of all, right now, the Angels, I'm not, when you take a look at this landscape of the AL, there's a chance they could make the playoffs, but the way that that team is built, I don't think they have enough to make that run. I could be wrong, and I've been wrong many times before, but I think that they know that this is the case. And so if you're the Angels, and you're thinking, man, we have this guy that he has this absolute true value under him, they would want to trade Ohtani, I think. Because I don't think, I think they even know that they may not have what it takes to fully make that run. And even if they do have what it takes, are you really going to let this package that you have, this Ohtani, that is able to net you this huge asking price, that is able to net you a ton of prospects, ton of players, whatever, you, like a huge amount that you could get back for him, just for one half, just for one more season with Ohtani that's already a fourth of the way done. And by the time of the deadline, we'll already be half done. And if you're another team that wants to go for Ohtani, there is one, there's two huge advantages that Ohtani gives you. First of which, actually, I'm going to make it three. First of which, butts in seats. You're going to sell more tickets when you have Ohtani-san playing every single day. Second of all, he adds value to any team in baseball. I cannot think of one team that if you added Shohei Ohtani to it, that team does not get better. And I think like that's obvious. I think you guys would all agree with that. The last one, though, it's something that you guys touched on that I disagree with. I think that if you sign Ohtani, you're doing it, if you trade for Ohtani, it's because you plan to sign him. And by having him on your team for half a season, you now have that entire full half a season to work on that deal with him, to work on that contract extension. And on top of it, now you have a full half season of him already getting used to the teammates, getting used to the culture, getting used to the coaches so that he doesn't have to worry about in the off season what teams he has to work with and figuring, is this going to work? Because I'll tell you what, that was probably one of the main reasons why he wanted to go to the Angels in the first place and see how well that's worked him. He is yet to be even to the postseason. So I think that if you're a team, you're willing to make a big package to go and get him because you're going to do better that season just by having that high-level caliber player. You're going to sell more tickets, which will help you sign Ohtani, give him the money that he wants. But also, you are getting that extremely valuable extra time in being able to negotiate that deal with him. I think right now it makes perfect sense.
Well, my thing is, though, like, I feel like it's just not super common for players to negotiate extensions during the season. And I think that
I think it happens a lot.
I'm just thinking, you know, I remember when Manny Machado, he was, I'm thinking of like the biggest, like the most recent, like real superstar rental trade in recent memory. Like when the Dodgers got Ohtani from, when the Dodgers got Machado from the Orioles, they were not able to extend him. They had him for like half a season and he was gone. He was on the Padres. If it was the off season, I could see it happening where, you know, a team ponies up and trades for Ohtani and then negotiates an extension with him before the season starts. But because we are in season, I just cannot see him negotiating a contract right now. So, it's to go with the fact that you're already going to be giving up so much for potentially less than half a season of him. It's not that I don't think the Angels are willing to part with him. It's that I don't think any team is going to be willing to meet the asking price, especially when you're at risk of losing him in a few months.
Okay. Alex, question for you.
Yeah, that's it.
Angels are on the phone. They are offering you Shohei Ohtani, but they want Julio Rodriguez plus. Are you hanging up the phone?
Not hanging it up. I'm always hearing the offer.
Okay. Julio Rodriguez. That's in the deal.
I would listen to the full offer. I would talk about it. Like, here's the thing. As much as I love Julio to death. I absolutely love that man. I would have his babies if I could. But Julio Rodriguez, at that point right now, we've had this talk before a billion times about the MVP vote, about the MVP award itself, how I hate how it's named. Because when you look at value, there is no player in baseball that brings the value of Shohei Ohtani. Do I think that the trade happens regardless? No, I don't think that happens. Of like, say, like a Shohei Ohtani for Julio, just for the what? I feel like Seattle would burn down before that.
Well,
happens.
It'd be more than Julio. That's the thing. It'd be
more than Julio, but I'm just talking about in general. I'm talking about just in general of it being, I'm just being the excuse me, lost train of thought. Trying again. I think that just the general of both teams losing their absolute superstars, that I don't think just wouldn't happen in general.
Okay.
I don't know what the trade would be. Okay. But I do think that if you're the Angels and if you're smart and you know that you're not going to be able to re-sign Ohtani, I think you lower that asking price, you lower it a good bit to make it happen.
All right, Mac, you are trading the Angels. They say Ohtani's available. They say Alvarez plus at least two of Beatty, Vientos, and the other dude, the other like shortstop, third baseman dude. That's
Mauricio?
That guy. At least three of those guys.
I'm declining the offer, if I'm being completely honest. The reason I'm declining the offer is that is the whole pending free agency thing. I'm not saying that I wouldn't have faith that Steve Cohen would try to negotiate with him. It's just that the thing that is the main holdup for me is that he's a rental. I understand he's a generational talent, and we have never seen anyone like him. And I don't know if we will ever see another Shohei Ohtani, but I don't think the Mets should be, or any team should be, mortgaging the farm to get him. They should only be trading for him if they know for sure they can extend him, they can retain him. Because if not, you're burning a lot for what? Like 60 games of him? That's the tough part.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm like, I don't think he gets traded, because you are either the Angels have to stoop really low and it's just, you know, a couple top prospects that, okay, fair enough. They're prospects. You know, the Braves were happy trading away Shea Langeliers and trading away their entire farm system to the A's. They were cool with that because they haven't been established at all. Like the Langeliers of the world, the Pache's of the world, guys like that. No team, the Angels wouldn't accept that trade. The Angels would fundamentally not do that. They need established major leaguers and established young major leaguers like the Carrolls, the Rutschmans, the Alvarezes, the, heaven forbid, Spencer Striders of the world. They'd be going after that and going after two or three of those guys. Not many teams have those at all, right? Mm-hmm. And even those teams, again, Baltimore, Arizona, they probably wouldn't do the deal, and those are not the markets that Ohtani would want to be in long term.
So here's my thing, and this is what I humbly disagree with. The idea that the asking price has to be that high. Because I understand that, you know, for what Ohtani is worth, absolutely, he's probably worth all that. But when you look at it from the Angels' point of view, where you're not making a World Series, you're at the very best making the playoffs. And that's even a very big if. And on top of it, just to add a little bit more onto it, Ohtani is more than likely not going to re-sign with you, then why not try to get something for him? And why not try to get something that is at least really strong for him? I could think of a ton of teams that you could give up a top prospect and probably an MLB-ready player and get Ohtani. I feel like that would be the smart move if you're the Angels. Do I think that's going to happen? Probably not. But I think that the Angels should lower their asking price And if they do lower it, I think you're going to see him dealt at the deadline.
You know, I think there's – I want to believe in what you're saying, but this is my perspective. I would rather be the one that in November I'm negotiating with Shohei Ohtani and it just doesn't work. I would rather be at the negotiating table instead of giving up Shohei Ohtani, one of the, you know, unique players in the history of the sport, for, to use a Braves example, for like Michael Harris and Bryce Elder. Like, what if you're the Angels, what are you doing? You're not getting generational players back. You're not getting a tenth of Ohtani's value.
Yeah, but you're not getting anything back if you just let him go either.
I had a shot with it. I talked to his agent. I had a conversation, and it wasn't a business thing.
I don't want to make a fundamental baseball error. But let's see, are you assuming that they haven't been talking at all already? They've probably been negotiating something for the last few years.
They have.
Yeah, I think so. Here's my perspective also, and I feel like we've sort of like brushed over this, is that, you know, if the Angels play well and are hanging in the playoff race, I would not trade Ohtani, because I think the big right now, their chances of re-signing him are pretty slim, I would say. But say they do, you know, they make the playoffs or try to make a run, that could significantly increase their chances of retaining him. Mm-hmm. And right now, their chances are really low. And I think that, you know, in my opinion, it would not be the best look to trade away, you know, one of the two generational talents you have on your roster.
Owner of the Angels cares about how the team looks about that?
That's the problem right now.
Good point. Fair enough.
If the Angels keep playing well, which they, like I said, they're not great necessarily, but with six teams making the playoffs, they have a chance. So I think they hang on to him and maybe they become buyers, because I think they're trying to prove to Ohtani that they do care about winning.
And this is like the last 20 years of Angels history. This is a team that is usually the one trending towards leaning all in, right? They're going to go after the big fish. And a lot of them don't work. You know, the Josh Hamiltons of the world, the CJ Wilsons of the world, a lot of them don't work. Albert Pujols ended up being a horrible contract. But the Angels, like in their recent history, have done the pushing here. They're the ones trying, they're asking questions, they're going for it. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't do it this year. Like, yes, you could lose Ohtani. That is on the table. But if you're, from my perspective, I'm obviously not the owner of the Angels. I'm not their general manager. I'm not in the Angels organization, but I would rather push all of my chips in when you have Trout and Ohtani, because guess what? If you make the playoffs, it's a big if you make the playoffs, you saw what the Phillies did last year. They were, you know, a game and a half away from winning the World Series if Yordan Alvarez doesn't become everyone's father, right? The 2021 Braves, hey, they won the World Series. The 2019 Nationals, hey, they won the World Series. You just have all these pieces that if you make the playoffs, it can happen. And the Angels, I think, will push more of that buy, even if they're the ninth seed in the American League like they are right now. They're currently 5 games out of a wild card spot, 8 games out of the division, 8.5 out of the division. I think they would lean into the buy and say, all right, we're going to go down swinging here. And I think that's a more respectable thing to do when you have Shohei Ohtani, as opposed to, hey, let's just, you know, trade him for pennies on the dollar. Yeah, you might lose him in free agency, but you're going to lose him for sure if you trade him.
So for those of you that want a little more of a history of how the Angels have wasted a lot of money over their last several years, go check out And That's Baseball's video titled How the Angels Burnt $1 Billion. It is a really good watch. Really sad, but really good. But with our hot takes now out of the way, we have one more, but I think we may have to save that one because we're getting
okay,
close on time.
Okay, we can just do a quick reaction
Let's do it quick on this one. Let's hear
okay, because this one this was too funny to pass up. And I quote, this is from at Daddy Umpire on the Bird app.
Oh,
my
great.
Hot take.
Oh, no.
My hot take is the Padres are too analytically focused. They need to go back to playing baseball. See the ball, hit the ball, baseball.
I have no clue what that means at all.
And then the first comment is, the Padres are one of the least analytical teams in the game.
I was going to say. Look, I don't even know what to say to that, if I'm being honest.
Can we just ignore that one? I feel like it doesn't deserve our time.
That was so I died laughing. I stopped scrolling and just died laughing.
I saw you during pre-show. Yeah, you just stopped like mouth agape. It was funny. All right, but that's it for hot takes here. Thankfully, we had three interesting discussions and then one that will not be talked about again. But it is now time for trivia, as I will be hosting trivia this time with 4-1 Matthias Olmekarzaki and 1 Ryan Splash Potts. And, you know, we're going to go back to our first segment. The first thing I want you guys, though, to do is make sure you close any stat sheets you guys have. Close any of that. Make sure you don't have anything to see. We're going to go back to the Rangers, as they have been on an offensive tear. They have been fantastic. They have been incredible to watch, unless you're a Mariners fan like me and you have been just depressed for the last week. But regardless, what I want you guys to do is, you know, we've seen some pretty interesting batting lineups from them, and we've seen some really interesting players do well for them. Of the players that have played at least 30 games from them, I want you guys from the top to guess the team's leaders in OPS, starting from the top and working your way down. Now, just to let you guys know for it, because Baseball Reference was being weird for me, I am using MLB.com's stats for this. And I have a list of all players from 30 that have played 30 games or more for the team. So I want you guys just to tell me in order what player is the best OP that has the best OPS. Feel like it's pretty simple for this one. You guys understand any questions you guys got?
I think I understand it.
Yeah, all this right. Is like the payroll question. We just go back and forth.
You're just going to go back and forth, three right, strikes.
Sounds good.
And by the time, once we get to no more players left that have 30 games, whoever has the least amount of strikes is the winner. And who has most strikes still available is the winner. And if we have a tie in there, then I have a contingency. So, okay. If you guys are all ready, I'm going to flip a coin.
Yep.
Last time I picked Splash, so Mac, this time you get to pick. Heads or tails?
Tails.
It is heads.
Ah.
Splash, would you like to go first or would you like to go second?
Mac, you can go first, buddy.
All right.
Oh, man. This is
going
to be difficult.
Mac, you're going first of at least 30 games played.
30 games
what
played.
What Ranger has the best OPS?
Okay, I'm not sure how many games this guy has played. That's the thing. I'm going to go with Corey Seager.
Corey Seager is your answer?
Yes.
And Corey Seager has given you your first strike.
God!
Corey Seager has played only 28 games.
Oh, of course.
So close.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Splash, you just got yourself a big advantage here. What is your answer?
I'm going to go with Marcus Semien.
Marcus Semien is correct. As an 881 OPS on the season so far. All right.
Whatever.
Back to you.
There you go.
I'm going to go with Josh Jung.
Josh Jung has earned you your second strike.
What the heck?
Oh, this might
let
be a
him
clean
cook.
Sweep.
Let
right,
him
clash.
This is rigged.
Your answer.
I noticed this when I was looking earlier. Is it Ezekiel Duran?
It is Ezekiel Duran.
Oh my
Eight,
god! I almost
7-9. By the way, a difference between Marcus Semien, who is signed to $1 billion deal,
yes,
basically, and Ezekiel Duran, their two OPSs are .002 apart. right now. All right.
There we go.
Mac, you're already against the wall.
Oh, man. I don't know if I can work my way out of this mess.
You got to try.
Right. I feel like he's got to be near the top, though. Josh Young.
Josh Young has earned you your first correct answer.
Finally.
856 OPS.
That's what I thought.
All right, Splash. Back to you.
I'm torn between two guys. I'm going to trust the process. I'm going to trust in him, more like trust in Heim, Jonah Heim.
Jonah Heim is correct. At 816 OPS.
All right, ballin'.
All right, back to you, Mac.
Oh, man. I think the next person is Adolis Garcia.
You are correct. At 813 OPS for Adolis Garcia. Also known as the Set One Charisma Award for the Texas Rangers and MLB The Show.
There you go. Thank you for not doing MLB The Show trivia, buddy.
I was about to.
That would have been rough.
You can't say I don't think of you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go with one of my favorite players in baseball, Nathaniel Lowe.
Nathaniel Lowe is correct. 797. OPS. All right, back to you, Max. Still two strikes. Splash has yet to get a strike, just like one Luis Arraez. All right.
Hey, he's good with two strikes, though. So can Mac channel
just
his
like
inner...
Mac. Mac is also really good with two strikes.
All right. Oh, all right. Man. Luis Arraez, let's see it, buddy.
I'm trying to remember who else is starting for them, first of all. Wow, I am completely stuck, if I'm going to be honest. I have no clue who this next person is, so I'm just going to...
Remember, we are also doing the prove it idea, so if you get your third strike, if Splash has to get the next one right to get you out.
Yeah, okay. Oh, man.
You should have been paying attention when I was listing off players earlier.
I know. The thing is, I was. I'm going to go, this is probably wrong. I'm going to guess Robbie Grossman.
Robbie Grossman has given Splash a chance to win it.
Yeah, of course.
That is incorrect. All right, Splash, you can get the next player. You will be today's champion.
So I actually don't know if this guy qualifies, but I'm going to go with Josh H. Smith.
Josh H. Smith, Splash, you have kept Mac in the game. All right, I'm not going to give you the next one. You just got to keep going for this one.
All right,
one.
Mac.
So, Mac, it is back to you. You know that it is not Grossman. You know it's not Smith. Well, it's going to be.
What in the world? It's okay. Because I feel like we've covered most of the positions already. Who in the world is on this team? Because, man, okay. I've got to do some thinking here.
All right, I'll tell you. I'm gonna give you both a hint for this one. Here, just a slot, and that's not much, but it's to give you an idea because you talked about starting. This guy does have 161 at bats. On the season, he's played in 45 games for the Rangers.
What? That does not help me, actually. I'm going to go with... I'll go with Mitch Garver. I know for a fact he's only played 8 games, so I do not know the answer.
Yeah, no, incorrect. Mitch Garver has only played in 9 games.
Yeah, close enough.
9. With an OPS, though, of 10-14.
There you go. That's what I mean.
There you go.
They're fantastic there, but not enough games played. So Splash, a chance to win it.
All right, I'll go with their starting center fielder, Leody Taveras.
Has eliminated Mac from the game and declared you today's champion.
Name was on the tip of my tongue, and I forgot.
Is he Willie Taveras' cousin?
Is he? I don't know.
I have no
idea. I don't know.
To give you guys an idea of a few more of the next available players, Travis Jankowski was next at 31 games with a 786 legend. OPS.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Josh H. Smith was next, 40 games, 727.
Then I thought he was
followed
higher.
By Robbie Grossman with 51 games, 6.990 OPS.
Braves
and then
legend.
The very last player that qualifies even for the list is Daddy Dimmu's legend, Bubba Thompson. With 36 games played and a 520 OPS.
Yeah, I think he got sent to the minors recently. But Bubba Thompson is he does have a lot of potential.
I mean, he's if you've ever watched any Daddy Dimmu TV videos, you know he's goated. So
I know.
All right. Well, congratulations, Splash. Another dub for you. Congratulations on winning today's trivia about the Texas Rangers.
GG, boys and girls. This is why you pay attention to reading.
Whatever.
All right. Well, as we get trash talk now aside, it is now time for the final segment of the day's week to end every podcast with a moment to ourselves. We take a minute, just talk about whatever's on our mind. Does not have to be about baseball, but most of the time can be if you so choose. Is there someone who would like to go first? If not, then I will go first. Or Mac, you wanted to go?
You can go first.
Sounds good. All right. I'll start us off with the timer. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. I really like golf. Golf, I think, is a really fun sport. I think it's one that's very heavily slept on a lot of the times. And if you can just learn a few simple things, you can be pretty solid. Like, I have a 12 handicap, which I think is pretty good overall. And I've been playing a good bit since I've been not working for the last couple weeks. And it's been fun, but I've only played over the course of this time. I get paired with random people. I've only been paired with one person who's actually beaten me. And I feel like if you just do a few simple things, you could change that. The first of which is don't swing with only your hands. I played a golf with a guy today that all he did was swing with his hands. It looked like he was trying to chop wood when he was hitting the ball. And yeah, don't use your hands. Use your legs. Your legs, just like in a baseball swing, your legs are stupidly important for swinging a golf club. And with the last thing I would like to say, I would like to give a happy birthday shout out to one of our followers, Rand O Some Guy, or also known as the guy who runs the Pokemon that wears sports paraphernalia. It is his birthday today, and a happy birthday to one of our fans. All right, that is the end of my time. Splash, did you want to go next?
Sure.
Sounds good. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, your beloved Mr. Splashman has lost 50 pounds this year. Woo, celebrate, yeah. That's an exciting, I don't want to say revelation. That's an exciting thing. You know, it's fun, like, challenging yourself, right, to, like, do the next thing, like walk the next 1,000 steps. I know yesterday I was on the phone with my cousin, actually. We were talking baseball, but I was using my grandmother's phone while my phone was charging, and I didn't get a chance to look at how many steps I had, because when I talk on the phone, I just walk around, right? So for those of you that are also morbidly obese like me, you have hope.
All right, Sal. Hey, I'm proud of you. I'm trying to lose weight, and that is the hardest thing in the world. So, mad props to you, man. Absolute mad props. All right, Mac, are you ready to go?
Yeah, sure.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, begin.
Yeah, so I just want to talk about college baseball for a second, because some of you may know the college baseball regionals are going on this week, and I feel like, you know, there have been a bunch of upsets. A lot of the teams that were hosting the regionals have actually been eliminated, including Vanderbilt, who's a baseball powerhouse. Miami got knocked out. Arkansas got beat twice by TCU, so they've been eliminated. And, you know, it just – I think that the College World Series is a ton of fun to watch, and it kind of bothers me that it doesn't get the same, you know, fanfare that something like March Madness or – bowl season in college football yet. And I think that we need more eyes on it. And I highly recommend, if you have a chance, to go watch some of these games because they are very exciting, especially moving forward. We're going to have, you know, if it's been double elimination, it's going to be single elimination. It'll be like March Madness. So watch these next games. Oh, and by the way, Syracuse, please bring back the baseball team. It's been 51 years too long without it.
Yes, please, Syracuse, please have a baseball team. We need more
college
baseball.
The ACC. The only team in the ACC that doesn't have a baseball team.
Apparently, Arizona is like something of a hotbed. Like, there's a bunch of random MLBers from Arizona.
Oh, yeah, there are. Yeah.
Kevin Newman.
That makes sense.
I think Kevin Newman.
It's a hot place, and when it's hotter there longer, it means you get more baseball.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Hashtag Mike Trout.
The Southwest.
It's more like the opposite, Spash.
Of course.
New Jersey
like,
is, yeah,
100%. New Jersey. Yes.
I hate the idea that Mike Trout didn't get scouted because it was cold where he was at.
Games get rained out.
imagine you are planning to go to this dude's game, and then there's this huge snowstorm that you can't watch him for like a week, and they're like, okay, well, he's probably not that good anyways, and then he's Mike Trout.
Imagine going to like a performance meeting, like when you're going to, and you're like, how did you miss on this guy? I was like, well, it was cold. I couldn't go to the game. It was rained out. And like, and he didn't stay for the next one. Like, it was cold.
That got rained out too. It's like the Braves Mets series when we were up in Queens.
Dude, just play in Seattle where half the fields are artificial because so you can still play in the rain.
Exactly.
And fair enough. All right. That's our show for today. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. Make sure you go follow all of us on Twitter. You can go follow me at thesportsguy242. You can go follow Mac at Matthias_A_K. You can go follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. You can also go follow our podcast Twitter account at LAR_Basil. We post every single day more stuff, including our mentions will be filled, ready to go for you when this podcast goes up. We are all across on Twitter. Make sure you go take a look at our stuff. We just passed over 250 followers. That's pretty cool, I think. So with that being said, thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. My name is Alex for Mac and Splash. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and hope to see you all real soon.